This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto here. Good to see you. Always honored to have you just listening. Hello, Dan Malloy. He's my partner in crime on this episode. But first, listen, I want to ask you something. If you earn your living communicating, then we've got a virtual Remarkable Results Toastmasters group. It's perfect for you. It's made up of aftermarket pros looking to improve their communication confidence and leadership qualities. Toastmasters' values are integrity, respect, service, and excellence. We would love to have you join. Toastmasters program does help you gain an edge in the workplace and in your life. Welcome you to join at remarkableresults.biz/Toastmasters. And here's the really cool thing. You can come on as a guest. Never really have to join and hang out. It's not that much money to be part of it. We meet twice a month, one daytime, one nighttime. So Toastmasters, I do this for a living, by the way, Dan, but Toastmasters has taught me an awful, awful lot.
Well, are you inviting me? It sounds like you're speaking to me.
Yeah, well, it does sound like I'm speaking to you. That's the job of a good podcaster, speaking to one person, right? And in this case, it happened to be you. Hey, thanks for coming on the show a little while back. It was in May of 2024, The Commitment Principle, How to Build Trust and Drive Sales in the Auto Repair Industry. Loved that episode. It got a lot of traction. Appreciate that. Now, I got to tell somebody of some behind-the-scenes stuff.
Sure.
Look, when I set up an episode with a guest, not only do we email back and forth and we maybe share some talking points and we try to shape the frame of the episode, but when we get into this virtual studio here and we go into what's called the green room before we hit the record button, I'm sharing this with you because Dan and I had a plan until he said, we don't have a plan.
We blew it up. Boom.
He says something, and I said, oh, that's a great song.
I hum something to what's going on, what's going on.
That's right. And I go, oh, my God, Marvin Gaye, one of my fave songs. Yeah. And we started to go into this whole thing about music. And son of a gun, doesn't he tell me something about his interesting life that he started some, I don't know, 30-some years ago?
30 years. Yeah, maybe a little bit longer than 30 years. 32 years ago, I started.
Since its relaunch in 2020, the NAPA AutoCare member site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the NAPA programs, promotions, benefits, and other information available to help their businesses thrive. If you're a NAPA AutoCare member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal. Not a NAPA AutoCare center? Well, contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the NAPA family. There's this video on the internet, and it's from Chick-fil-A. Everyone has a story, and it is an incredible little, maybe 3 or 4 minute video, and it really goes through the restaurant, and it shows you different people, and it explains what's going on in their life, because we look at people all the time, Dan, and we just don't necessarily know what's behind. People have legacy. People are going through things right now. People are planning stuff tomorrow. They survived something from yesterday, right? And sometimes we just look at people at their face value and don't realize the greatness, the baggage, the stress, the positivity. We just don't realize it. We just face value stuff.
The struggles that they're all engaged in.
And ironically, we're going through. So what were some of your favorite artists, Carmen? What did you do? And tell me a little bit more about your background as we slowly get to know more about each other, learn about each other. And I'm just going through all of these damn groups. And he says, Eric Clapton. Oh, hang on, Carm. So before I turn the recorder on, he gets up, he leaves, he gets a picture, and he puts this picture up in front of the camera. And it's Eric Clapton. I go, my God, that's Eric Clapton probably in his 50s or 60s. The shorter hair, the brown hair, the beard, the glasses.
Right. I don't do an old Eric Clapton. Like we do a middle-aged Eric Clapton.
And he goes, Carm, that's me. And I just went crazy because it looks just like the middle-aged Clapton. This guy's a singer with his wife, has a group, has an Eric Clapton tribute band, and I'm blown away by this. I just can't wait. I got to go listen to some of the stuff you guys recorded.
I told you I'll send you some. In addition to running my company, you know, but like you said, Pete, you have visions in life. I mean, this is what I think an interesting discussion, you know, because if I don't follow my dream with a voice in my head one day, there's something I've been singing my whole life, literally, in the car. When I first got a car and I had my stereo system in the car and singing to music, to singing to the Beach Boys and John Mayalls, the blues tunes, you know, and the Beatles. We grew up on the Beatles, of course, and all that stuff was easy. But so it kind of was percolating inside of me for many years. And then when I hit 40, one day I just woke up and I said, you know what? I'm going to get me a vocal coach because I want to learn how to sing. And then that started me on this whole journey. But if I don't listen to the voice in my head that said, you should learn how to sing, I don't meet my wife. I don't wind up on the Letterman show. I don't wind up on the Today show. I don't play with people that play with Jimi Hendrix. I don't play in front of big audiences. I don't learn to sing the national anthem and sing in front of thousands and thousands of people performing the national anthem. So it's like, it's the one, and this ties directly back to what we talked about last time in my book on language and communication. You get an idea in your head to do whatever it is. You want to become the greatest chess player. You want to learn to do this, that, or the other thing. And you get that idea in your head. And if you declare it and you declare it to people that will listen to you, in my case, in the music case, it had to be a vocal coach, right? And so I remember the first conversation I had with her, Melissa was her name. So I go to my first lesson. I was a little nervous because I'm a total novice about how to sing, right? So we start practice, start working out. She says, Dan, your voice is fine. He says, but your ears, like this. It wasn't, I had never done scales. I had a good voice. The voice was not the issue, but I can't tell you how many thousands of hours of practice to be able to hear and match, get my voice tuned up to sing on key was a real struggle. You know, now I've mastered it, but I still practice scales. I have a 20-minute vocal warm-up I do, scales.
Okay, I have to confess with you about singing in the car.
Oh, please.
I do. And I realize that some days I'm good and some days I'm really bad. And when I'm really bad, I try to fix or change my voice and, you know, and find, you know, let me see, I'm trying to remember. It's chest voice or I keep forgetting about.
Right. If you sing from your throat, you can't sing many songs if you're going to sing from up here.
Right. It's mid-voice or wherever. And I realized the importance of, maybe there's some natural singers out there, but there's also ones that have been taught. And how I can some days when I'm singing to a favorite song, I stumble upon it on the radio and I want to do the chorus or a lead because they're your favorite songs, so you know them. And how I can sometimes hit it and sometimes I can't. And then I say, how come I can't today? And then I work on it and I get it. So to your point about singing and duplicating someone's voice and having your own, I don't think it's an easy thing to do. I think to your point, I think you got to. And it's like, oh, I want to be a great leader. You're not a natural leader right away. You have to stumble and fail and go through that and find how to lead.
You have to be willing to die on stage.
Bingo. Or in front of your people.
I call it being comfortable with being uncomfortable. You have to be, if you can't do that, you can't be a singer. And the more honest you can be about it, I mean, sometimes the band is going to screw up or you're going to make a mistake or whatever. It happens in a live show, you know, but you got to be willing to die on stage, so to speak, in order to live, you know, in order to have a great show, you got to be willing to die. So like in order to get a base hit, you got to be willing to take a strike three at the same time, right? You have to be.
I love the term you said, being comfortable by being uncomfortable. And I think through my lifetime, I put myself in some precarious situations that I was so uncomfortable with, but I grew and I learned from it. You know, it's one of those things, Dan, where for 24 hours, it's going over in your head. Why did I do this? What were my reasons for this? And all of a sudden, if you will, you become hardened, not in a bad way, but in a learning sense, or you just, okay, I get that. So if it ever happens again, this is what I do. And these are the questions that I ask. And this is the follow-up.
I think if you don't put yourself in a position to fail, you're never going to grow. And I learned because of what I studied, you know, and I'll share with people, a little shameless self-promotion. You know, I wrote a book about the language of commitment. And because I've been studying language and communication for many years, and one of the things, what we're talking about now, if you declare you're going to become a singer, since we're talking about that, what's a better example, I think? Well, any big thing in your life that you put yourself out and you commit to doing something, you commit to whatever it is. You want to start a business. You're going to do a big show. You're going to go into run a 10K or a half marathon or whatever, a marathon, whatever you're going to do. You could fail. You could fail. But you won't know that until you put yourself out there. But then when you succeed and you do it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, that's where the, I think, the real joy comes from. But you, the moment you declare what you're going to do, the exact opposite is born. So like here, I'm going to become a singer. No, you're not. You're too old. When I declared I was going to become a singer, true story, I found a vocal coach in New York and I worked with her for a while. Then I found one that was really highly regarded here in New Jersey. She wouldn't take me. I was 40 years old. She wouldn't take me. I had to talk my way in because I'm too old. I'm too this, I'm too that. And here I am, I'm still doing it. And I performed all over the New York City area, played big venues, and literally was on the Today Show and performed with people that played with Jimi Hendrix. But if I listened to her, I would. So my point is, when you declare what you're going to do, the exact opposite is born. So it's the mirror image. Here's become a successful singer. Here's total failure. They come together. It's like when you say you're going to get up and do karaoke. You must sing karaoke, Carm.
No, I don't. Honest to God, I think about that a lot. And I keep saying to myself, what song would I want to sing within my range that I think I could without cracking my voice? That's been my challenge a long time, Dan.
What song? All right, so this is, I'm going to challenge you now.
I don't know.
What song would it be?
Well, because of the depth of my voice, I almost keep thinking, and again, I don't call me crazy, but I was just thinking of a Sinatra song. I really was thinking of, because I think I have that range, his range.
I thought you were going to tell me Foreigner, and I said, no, you can't do Foreigner. You can't.
But anyway, and don't ask me why I would have picked a Sinatra song and why I wouldn't have picked some other person. I haven't thought about it a lot. It's just been, there's always fleeting thoughts. I'll bump into a Sinatra song every once in a while, and I say, wow, you know, Summer Wind, or The Way She Looks Tonight.
Oh, yeah, I could hear. The way you just said Summer Wind. I don't even know how to do it. Just say it again. Go ahead.
The Summer Wind.
You could break into song right now.
Please, to all of our younger audience, please don't turn us off right now and leave us. We're talking Sinatra. But for Dan to do Eric Clapton, I think, spans the generations. And some of his songs, how about 60, 70% of his songs are still played today?
Yeah. You know, it's such a blessing. You know, I couldn't have asked. This is another thing about following your dream that I've discovered. If you follow your dream, whatever that is, doesn't matter. This one area of my life happened to be music and singing. And then the Clapton thing happened by accident. I didn't start because people thought I looked like Eric Clapton 30 years ago. That wasn't why I started singing. I was a Clapton fan before. I mean, if I heard about Clapton when I was 15, 16, when he was with Cream and with John Mayall's group and all of that. So I knew who he was and I was a fan. But I started singing because it was a dream. It was a vision that I had, you know, and it was, but then the magic shows up afterwards. After you commit to your journey, whatever that journey is, the magic happens. That's when the magic starts to show up, if you really commit to it, okay? And so then all of a sudden the Clapton thing happened. Next thing I know, I meet my wife. It's a true story how I met Doreen. We've been together 30 years. When I was learning to sing, I would hang out in karaoke places around the New York City area. And so the same company was running a lot of the karaoke places. So one day I asked the boss, I said, I want to learn how to be in front of the room and how to handle the crowd and how to work a microphone and everything. So I said, I want you to give me a karaoke thing to do one night a week. That's all, one night a week. So he did, in a club called the Cellar Door in Bergenfield, New Jersey. On Thursday nights, I would bring in equipment, set up the PA, and I would host
a karaoke gig.
Yeah. And so then one night, Doreen comes in, who's now my wife. She walks in and she gets up and sings one song. And she's so good. She captivated me with one song. I went up to her immediately after she sat down, up to her table, and she was sitting with her girlfriend. I knew her girlfriend. And I looked her in the eye and I just said, I gave her a piece of paper and a pencil. I said, give me your phone number, just like that. I call it a power close, right? The power close. And we've been together ever since. Her friend gave her an elbow and said, give him the damn phone number.
Ironically, I met my wife in a bar too, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away under extremely interesting circumstances.
That's funny.
Yeah. I met her and then we never got married till 4 years later.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
But we weren't going out at all. It was an interesting split of lives and how I re-met her. I really should tell that story one day on the podcast because it's a cool story. I mean, so many of the interesting things that happened in my life really embrace cool circumstantial stories. I think almost all of us. How'd you meet your wife? You got 10 minutes? You know, just like you just did. It's so interesting to think back. I don't know, where'd the last 10 years go? I mean, just like that.
I don't know.
I've been podcasting for 9, and it goes so fast, and I almost think we forget about these incredible stories of our life that put us in circumstances. And on the podcast before, I've talked about decades, and it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, when you're in your 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s. The point of it is that there's always these time chunks that happen, and all of a sudden, you start to be a different person because of the circumstance, the income, the job that you have, the friends, the culture of society, and everything evolves and changes. When I think back, you could think back just 30 years ago when you had this commitment to sing. Now look at where you are and where that took you and the people you met. They were chunks of time for you. And I think we have to think about that. I want to be a great leader. Well, you don't read one leadership book and become a great leader. To your point earlier, you've got to fail a bunch of times in order to get there. And still constantly learn.
Right. Yeah.
And over time, you learn, things get better, you're coached, you're mentored, you're embarrassed, you pick yourself up, you move on, just like you having to learn how to sing.
Right. No, exactly. And you got me deep in my head now. When you talk about the whole time.
It's my job.
It does go by so fast. You know, we're both about the same age, and a Cajun gentleman once told me life is about the experiences. You know, you think about the money you can't take with you, but the stories like being at Woodstock, stuff like that.
Did you go?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it was, I can still picture it today. It's like the stories about things like that. I think that's what life is all about on some level. The failures, the successes, all that.
You have just a favorite song or an impactful song.
Sunshine of Your Love, I heard when I was about 15, 16, and I was in my cousin's house. I was into sports. I wasn't really into music that much when I was at that age. But my cousin he lived right up the block from me, 5 houses away, and we were like brothers, right? And so I went into his bedroom, and he had a little turntable. He was playing Sunshine of Your Love, and I was like, it blew my mind. You know, I had never heard anything like that before, first time I heard it. Here I am all these years later performing it. It's one of my favorite songs.
Wow. Oh, my. Wow. Cream.
What are the odds of that? If the other thing is, like, I'll give you an example. I was such a jock. I was a locker room. I was just into sports my whole life, but I had this secret ambition about music that came out when I allowed it out. I allowed it to come out when I was 40 years of age. One of my high school friends came to see our last show we did last September, and after the show, he came up to me and says, when did you get so freaking good? You know, it's like, I said, well, a lot of practice. I mean, you know, we do have a good show, a good band, but he couldn't believe it, you know? So it's like, I enjoy that. The thing about music, when we perform and the crowd won't let you leave the stage, they want more, they want more, they want more. So the way we design, so Sunshine of Your Love and Badge typically are our last two songs because it's so powerful. And my guitar players who do a Clapton show, that my guitar players are the best. You can't even imagine how good these guys are. Well, you'll see it.
Well, they have to be if you're going to be a Clapton tribute band. Yeah.
Right. They're amazing. Absolutely. Ungodly. And talk about like living life in the moment. You know, when you're on stage and there's 400 or 500 people in front of you and the crowd is demanding more and they won't let you leave the stage. You know, that's exciting.
Do you have to have a manager to get your bookings?
I do it on my own. And I don't have a lot of time now. So it's like, I'm in the process of just trying to get one location. I don't want to play out every week. It's not what it's about. I'd like to play 4 or 5 times a year, do a big show 4 or 5 times a year. You know, that's my vision. Anyway, that's what I'm working on.
A reality of doing business today is facing a technician shortage, and Napa Auto Care is a free solution with the Napa Auto Care Apprentice Program. The program was pioneered by one of our own, Pete McNeil, and master technician Jake Sorensen from McNeil's Auto Care in Sandy, Utah, and they realized that the problem of not having technicians available for hire was not going to solve itself and decided to take action. A focus was put on younger individuals with the right passion, desire, aptitude, and attitude to work in the automotive repair industry.
Jake and Pete sought after these individuals and developed a technician apprentice program to give them the training needed to become a successful technician in today's world. The NAPA Auto Care Apprentice Program includes a comprehensive 9-stage curriculum that includes a variety of types of training, including exclusive in-depth classroom training videos, instructor-led NAPA Auto Tech classes, web-based Auto Tech e-learning courses, and practice skills with hands-on learning in the shop with the guidance of a mentor. The apprentice program curriculum is competency-based, meaning an apprentice can move through each stage at a pace that best suits them. Most apprentices complete the program within 2 years, and upon completion, apprentices will have earned 4 ASE certifications, G1, A4, A5, and AC certifications, adding industry validation to the skills an apprentice acquires. Apprentice graduates are also registered with the Department of Labor as Journey Worker Automotive Technicians. Having an apprentice in your shop will ultimately benefit your shop as they advance through the program. In most cases, as the apprentice develops their skill set producing billable hours, you'll see a growth in your gross profit by stage 5. One of the largest entry barriers for individuals looking to enter the automotive repair industry is the cost of tools. To keep your apprentice motivated, they receive an apprentice toolkit, including a 4-drawer tool cart for all registered apprentices. Together, NAPA Auto Care and your shop can fix the technician shortage. Start now, grow your own, and build your bench. Our future technicians can come from our concentrated efforts, and it's free. Contact your NAPA representative to learn more or log in to member.napaautocare.com or contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store's sales representative. I'm going to share with you my song, and it's not any one particular the greatest bestest song that I know, but you remember a song by a group called Free called All Right Now? All Right Now. Anyway.
Yeah.
It was a one-hit wonder, I believe, the group Free. It was 71, possibly. And I'll never forget, every time I hear the word Free, it takes me back to my college days when I was DJing in college. I was in college radio, and we were out in the town doing a live remote. Wow, imagine that. I was a DJ and doing a live remote. Ooh, God, I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm doing this. And it was only a dream of mine back then. And one of the songs...
Back in the day, was that even a big deal, doing a live remote? Did they do that a lot?
No. We were part of the community and it was like, we're going to do a live remote. What's that? Just show up. You know, all the brainiac, all the wizards, you know, however they ran the lines back in the 70s to get you hooked into the radio station, they did all that magic. But every time I hear Free and All Right Now, and I'm sure a bunch of in our audience know that song, it immediately takes me back there. It is amazing. And don't ask me why I connected that day, that event, that song to that. But that's the power of us.
Of music, yeah, of music.
Not only of music, but situational things that we get ourselves into. We're saying, you get one of those outer body experiences, inners and outers, and say, wow, what's this all mean?
It's funny what you talk about. I like the power of music, be able to conjure up those memories. My wife and I were driving somewhere within the past few weeks, and some old Motown song or something like that came on from the 50s, 60s. All of a sudden, we're both singing the words. Both of us are singing together in the car, which we tend to do a little bit, but we hadn't heard the song in 35 years, you know, and all of a sudden the words like doo-wop diddy diddy dun diddy doo, there she was just walking down the street singing doo, you know, songs like that that just come up. The words have been embedded in your nervous system at such a level that you just know them and you sing them.
You know, Dan, it's an emotional connection. Ann and I will be traveling, we'll bump into a song on the radio that we both either know, fell in love with, has meaning for us, that we think we know all the words, but if sometimes I can't get all the words right, what I can get is the emotion of the song.
Yes.
Because those words speak to us.
Right.
And they're really special moments if you let it happen. If you let music into your life, and so many people do, it has a very big and powerful impact on you. I am not a professor of music. I don't quite get it, but music has power.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The voice, sound.
The lyrics.
The lyrics, right. I'm a big lyrics guy, and the melody and everything. but it does speak to you. You know what song spoke to me? First time I heard it was Freddie King performing Have You Ever Loved a Woman?
Oh, wow.
And I've been working on that song for 30 years. It's true. I've never performed it out. The reason is because I'm close. I actually wanted it on the last show we did. We rehearsed it. And I'm ready to do it. And the guys in the band and my wife and everybody said, it's too boring, you know.
But it spoke to you, yeah.
It spoke to me. Have you ever heard, can you picture Freddie King singing at all? Do you know who Freddie King was?
I don't.
Oh, all right. So he's a blues guy from the 50s and early 60s. But he was a monster vocalist and made a huge difference in the lives of people like Eric Clapton and the Stones and everybody.
You know what I admire in music? I admire the producer. Listen, I get the singer, I get the songwriter, I get the musicians. But when you go back and you listen to a song and say, listen to that just little segment of vocal, where did that come from? Why do I love that part so much? Was it really part of what the songwriter and the singers and the band thought of? Or was it the producer from the outside that said, hey, let's do another track and I want you all to just sing this little mini chorus thing. And it becomes your favorite segment of the song.
Right.
Producers are brilliant on how they put this everything together.
And, you know, it's funny you should say that because in preparing for this next show that we're doing, I did a little research on a song called Bad Love that Clapton wrote with this guy by the name of Mick Jones from Foreigner. Actually, you mentioned Foreigner before. Mick Jones of Foreigner and Clapton. But here's how it happened because of the producers. At Clapton's record company. And the people that they told him we want another hit. We want a hit. Of course, they all want a hit, right? We want another hit. And we want you to use the Layla formula. Now, who knew there was a Layla formula? I don't know what that is, but they want to use the Layla formula to create another hit. So Clapton got with Mick Jones. Obviously, I guess they were friends, and they wrote this song titled Bad Love. And the formula worked because he won a Grammy Award for Best Rock Male Vocal. But if the producers and the record company didn't want him to do that, he wouldn't have never done it. Another example, I think, of something like that is he only had, as far as I know, two number one singles. One of them, he didn't want to perform. He didn't like the song. He didn't even write it. And he did it anyway. Go ahead. What is it?
Oh, God.
It became a number one hit.
From the new movie Phenomena?
No. I know that was... Change the World?
Yeah, Change the World?
Change
it. It wasn't that?
No, it wasn't that. I don't think that became a number one hit, but I Shot the Sheriff.
Wait a minute. Was that J.J. Cale?
I Shot the Sheriff with Bob Marley. J.J. Cale was After Midnight Cocaine. He wrote Cocaine.
Yeah, he wrote Cocaine, J.J. Cale did, right? Yeah.
Yeah, from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
He covered a lot of J.J. Cale songs, Eric Clapton did.
Yeah, they became friends. He did an album with him.
Yeah, he did. That's right.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the album. Yeah, he did an album with him.
Oh, my.
So here we are. We changed the topic. We were going to talk about business and you said.
And we were going to talk about culture. We were going to talk about the fact that, and I did some studying to do this until, you know, we got on the pre-call and you and I just went crazy on this whole music thing and you told me about your background. But, I was really thinking about the quote from Peter Drucker that says, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Oh, I haven't heard that. I like that. I'm going to write that down. Culture eats
strategy for breakfast. And it basically, you know, it's about the human factor of a company. You can have all the strategy and if you want, but if you don't have the human side of anything you're doing, it's no good.
Culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Culture eats strategy for breakfast. And because you have to have a human factor in your company.
I love that quote. Thank you for sharing that. That's so huge.
Yeah, it is.
Back to the question again, how do you form a culture? How do you form a heartbeat inside a company? Boom, 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 boom. How do you do that?
Oh, by the way, let's just hook that to music. Who says that part of our culture, all the great things that make our culture up, are the human side of our business, doesn't include music somehow? I don't know how it works, but music is such a big part of our life and the fabric of our world. And while you were just saying a few things, I started to think about, remember I talked about producers? You know, the producers are really a very big part of the magic of the song. Well, Jeff Lynne, ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, the lead, I love their music, just love their music. I did some research on Jeff Lynne. He ended up producing for a lot of people and writing songs for a lot of other people. And the beauty of it is that Jeff Lynne songs are so different all the time. They're not just, he doesn't have one particular style. He's got that magic. And when you think of the producer that's really, if you will, the lead to the song, he's hearing everybody's strengths, everybody's greatness, and he's layering these tracks. Think of a producer as the leader of the company who's bringing this, you know, this, he's got to be able to take all the personalities of all the musicians and all the talent and what everyone can produce and make for the sake of producing the record, producing goodness for the customer experience, right? The listener's experience. I'm just connecting this in my head all of a sudden.
Yeah, no, it's. I think it's a great analogy, you know, and running a band, and I've had lots of different iterations over the last 33 years of what we do, and working with musicians some kind can be challenging, if you will. But, you know, running a company, also challenging, you know, but I love that quote, culture eats strategy for breakfast, you know, and...
It's the human factor of the company.
Yes.
And we are not necessarily working hard toward that.
Can I share something with you?
Please.
Remember my story. I was a partner in that company. We had 104 auto repair and tire stores.
Right. Yeah.
Back in that, we bought it from BP in 1998.
We talked about it in your last episode.
Yeah. So here I am, a novice in the industry, but I'm somewhat of an expert in the domain of communication, things like that. Right. So they sent me out to be the district manager for 8 stores in the Toledo market. So a couple of things. I said to myself as I was going out, I knew that we had a problem after about 4 or 5 months in the business. I knew we had a problem, real problem with how people communicated because I could hear it as I went from store. I didn't have the tools I have now to listen and dissect language and all that. I didn't have any of that back then. Now we do. We use artificial intelligence. We do all kinds of stuff to figure out what's going on in terms of. So I go out and I figure, okay, how are we going to communicate with the customers? And the very first thing I came up with, I wrote down on a piece of paper, was this phrase, I can help you with that.
Yeah, I can help you with that, yeah.
And I don't know if we talked about it last time, but.
We did.
But, and what it's turned out to be way more powerful. You talk about culture inside a company. I said to myself, what was my genesis of that was, what do I want my team to say every time when that phone rings, the very first thing that's going to come out of their mouth, because we know what the customers are going to do. The customers do the same thing every time. They call up and they say, how much is blank? Or I have a problem with blank. How much? Or, you know, can you fix this? And how much? It's the same types of conversations. And the only thing I thought that made sense was for us to say, yes, I can help you with that. They're going to make a request. We're going to make a reply to that request. Yes, I can help you with that. And I can help you with that.
That's an important emotional marker for me when someone would say that to me, no matter how stress.
If they mean it, we're back to what you said before. If you mean it, if you feel to get the emotion going, like with music.
Oh, I get it.
If you say it, you mean it. It's calm. You're in luck, my friend, because I can help you with that. And I can help you with that right now.
But it's how you say it. It's your level of sincerity. It's your eye contact. It's your body posture. It's everything that makes me feel that you're sincere and that this is going to work. I'm fine. I'm in good hands with Allstate.
Right. Exactly. So, but I think that also what I've learned over since now, that's how many years? That's 25, 26 years since I was in that position back then. And what I've realized now is that becoming, talk about a heartbeat of a company, I believe that the very best heartbeat for companies, culture, is to become an I can help you with that organization. My opinion, my studied opinion. If you take that on as your mantra, because think about it. Why do companies exist? Why does a company even exist?
Well, that's the value set. That's the mission, vision, values. That's why we're here. We're doing what we're doing.
But why do people start companies? What's the purpose behind a company?
Golly, I mean, they've got a dream of wanting to help people, typically.
Right. They want to help people. The companies exist for one purpose. I don't care how big or small a company is. They're designed to help other people, other human beings. That's what they do. Every company out there.
Even if you make ice cream, you want to help people. Yeah, get it.
Exactly. You're there to help other people have a good time with the ice cream, whatever it is. So that's the point. The problem, and I think in building a culture, is that people don't know how to express that. But my role in life. This is my role in life. This is what I do, is help companies, teach companies how to express that I can help you with that and mean it. And if you can do that well, if you as a company, then you establish a culture and I can help you with that culture. So that means that everybody, and this has to be declared. This is a song. This is a song that the owner operator has to sing every day when they come in, you know, that the general manager has to sing, my opinion, that we hire you. For instance, if I was hiring you to be a service advisor in my shop, I'm hiring you to make commitments to help other people and to declare to them that you're going to help them and to mean it. I'm not hiring you to give, I don't need you to give out prices and technical information and all that stuff. I need you to make commitments to help other human beings, including your team.
I love the I can help you with that theme that you have. I mean, Dan was holding up a sticker before. If you're watching this on video, you saw it. But I can help you with that, not only between me and my client, my customer, but me and my team. How many times do we go to each other and ask for support or a question? And to have that overarching, if you will, company culture of I can help you with that, part of the value set is that we will always help each other. It could be a value set. I can help you with that. Even if it's as simple as, hey, can you tell me when you think you can get that car done? Yeah, I can help you with that.
Right. I want to share a little story with you. This is a true story. You're right on about that. Two things. Could you imagine what it would be like if you had a company with 100 employees and every day, every employee came in and the minute they crossed that threshold, they're like, who can I help? They're like, who can I help? Who needs help? So that becomes the mantra for the whole company. And it's become, if somebody's not an I can help you with that human being, get rid of them. I hate to say it like that. But if they're not in that, it's like rowing the boat. If they're not rowing in that direction, then what are they doing? They're rowing in the wrong direction. You know, so you give them a chance. Obviously, you want to train and teach and coach them. But if they're not an I can help you with that human being, then and you're an I can help you with that company, you know, you got a problem. But you got me all excited now about this stuff. Let me share this story with you. I taught the language of commitment to a guy that became a very good client of mine, Danny Smith, out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He bought the language of commitment big time, and he's blown up his business from $4.8 million to $19 million. The guy took off. Well, after about 2 years of working with him, I invited a bunch of dealers out to his store, to meet him and spend some time with Danny. So I had about 5 or 6 dealers coming out. We were going to spend time together. And that was going to be like on a Tuesday and Wednesday, 2 days. His technicians in his lead store found out about the meeting that we were having. They came in on Sunday. Nobody asked them to do it. They came in on Sunday and power washed the floor of the shop, organized everything, cleaned everything up just because they were that committed to Danny Smith. True story. And we were like flabbergasted. They came in on a Sunday on their own time and power washed the floor so that the store would look spit polished when the guests came in from out of town.
That says a lot.
Think about it. That's what we're talking about.
That says so much. Never having to be asked. Always anticipating why you need to do things, trying to give the bestest representation of the company that they are so proud to work for, realizing that, hey, we missed up a little bit. We didn't clean up like we should have. Let's do it right. And there's a lot of things you could look into this with, but more importantly, they were all in. They were all in 110% for the company, the culture was supreme for them, the human side of it.
And to your point, it took a few years for him to establish that as the culture, and he had to shift before he adopted the language of commitment. And I just say he became an I can help you with that human being. He was a command and control dictator coming from a different place completely. And he saw the light, he flipped. He completely flipped. He changed his whole way of being. And then his company took off. He started growing at the rate of 20% every year.
I love your point of command and control dictator. You only get soldiers who work for you who will only do what you tell them to do. There's no growth. There's no creativity. You can't do anything beyond what the scope of your discipline is. Wait a minute, to another point of yours, growing your culture, becoming a better leader is a work in progress. I said earlier, you can't read one leadership book and expect that you're going to be a great leader. And you can't make a strong commitment to improving the culture of your business and see it happen overnight. There's just no way that happens. To your point, it takes years to develop that. But typically, once you get going, you end up going, it's almost like lighting up the Saturn V rocket.
Yeah, well, that's what's happened to a few of my clients as a result of becoming, I can help you with that oriented. I can help you with that, being oriented towards that is what I call becoming a commitment-based organization. Because I believe that people want to help each other, but if you don't know how to express it, it's not going to work well. It's like knowing a song, but not being able to sing it. Do you know what I'm saying? I want to sing a good song, but if you don't practice it and you can't sing it, then what's the point?
You know, I love what you just said, the word practice. Everything that we're talking about as far as business and culture and improvements and systems and processes and communications, you just don't say all of a sudden I got a new software tool to make us communicate better if you don't practice it and you groom into it. I love the word practice. To be a singer, to musician, if you want to do anything good, you got to practice it.
Yes. And you said you're a member of Toastmasters?
Yes.
It's interesting to me because I think I went to one meeting around here and I just didn't think I had the time to devote to it because I have other...
We're virtual. Virtual Toastmasters happened during COVID.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you have an organization like ours, the influence we have in the industry. And I got together with Chris Cloutier and Craig O'Neill.
Oh, Craig. Oh, yeah. Craig. I know Craig.
Myself, my daughter, Tracy, we formed a Virtual Toastmasters, got accredited from Virtual Toastmasters. You can get yourself to be a master Toastmaster by doing the same things in your virtual club that you would in a one-on-one. We have a twice a month, one afternoon, one evening, and I have learned so much in Toastmasters, and I do this for a living. And I was excited to be part of it. I was excited to start this organization and the people that have been in it. I've watched them blossom. Think of service advisors. Think of owners who want to be better communicators, because I don't think you could be a great leader if you're not a good communicator, period. I'm sorry. That's just how I feel. And part of communication is learning how to listen. And in Toastmasters, you're not always talking. It's a one-hour disciplined and structured meeting. You not only learn to be able to talk on your feet in a timed environment, but you're also learning how to critique other people and learning from what they do or say. And, you know, there's the grammarian.
What times are your meetings?
2 o'clock on the first Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern the first Thursday, and 7 p.m. on the third Thursday of the month.
On the third Thursday?
Yeah. RemarkableResults.biz/Toastmasters. Everything you'd ever want to know about Toastmasters is there, and you can show up as a guest anytime.
Is Craig usually there?
Always. He's our president.
That makes sense. Craig has got that. He's got the energy, man, I'll tell you.
Yeah, he is our president, and he has a brand new podcast coming out on the Aftermarket Radio Network called Speak Up.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. Really excited about that. It'll be coming out in June. Speak Up.
That's great.
Hey, look, I know we kind of went to a million places, and you and I think we could come back together again, just reach up into the clouds, pull a topic down, and we could roll with it. This was a blast. I learned an awful lot about you and your musical background.
Same here.
I know that if our audience is saying, where did you guys go with this? Go back and listen to it again and pull all the great gems of wisdom that Dan gave us here today.
I think we kind of circled back around to the topic at hand, didn't we?
We kind of did. I mean, we could have gone on for an hour on culture. I think it was neat how we kind of pickled and sparsed and connected some dots here. It was fun.
Yes, it was fun.
I had a blast.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate being here with you.
Wow. Dan Malloy, Malloy Business Development, MalloySales.com, and the Eric Clapton Tribute Band. Oh, wait a minute. StrangeBrew.com, right? .com.
Strange Brew, killing what's inside of you.
As soon as I hang up here, I'm going to get on the web and I'm going to look all over that website.
I'll email you some YouTube.
Yeah.
So you get a sense of it. Yeah.
Love to see it. Well, how cool. Thank you, my friend, Dan Malloy. See you, bud.
Peace, my brother. Be good.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.